Welcome to Working Overtime, the advice-forward Sunday brunch to Working's three-course tasting menu. I'm Isaac Butler.
And I'm Karen Hahn.
Hey, Karen, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
You know, the week that we're recording this is the first week of the new semester where I teach, and so I do feel a little bit hit by a truck, but just trying to keep going. Karen, you may remember, because I think you were the co-host that week, that a couple weeks ago, I begged listeners to help me procrastinate by sending us letters for me to read. And one of our listeners, this woman, Emily, was kind enough to aid me in the near blowing of a deadline by sending a wonderful email filled with recent cultural experiences she had, some thoughts about the show and everything, but she also needed some advice. So here is our Working Overtime producer, Kevin Bendis, with a read of listener Emily's advice question.
I have the most wonderful problem in the world, and I don't know what to do. Recently, I received a substantial grant to support my writing over the coming year. Because I live cheaply in a cheap place to live, the grant will enable me to do more or less whatever I want through the end of the year. I have never had this kind of opportunity before, and I'm both thrilled and terrified by it. I'm keenly aware that using this time to best advantage could break my career wide open. And while I very much want to rest and regenerate, I also know I need to set some goals and timelines so I actually accomplish something. As it happens, I've never really established goals or timelines for myself before, so I'd appreciate any advice along those lines, as well as any tips on how to best take advantage of a gift like this one.
Karen, just want to say, I love it when people have this kind of problem. They've succeeded to the degree where they have to learn how to do new things. So congratulations, Emily. Thank you so much for writing us. I know you've had the experience of externally imposed deadlines on big projects like your wonderful book, Bong Joon-ho, Dissident Cinema, or even the daily deadlines of writing for Polygon and Slate. But now you're exploring writing for TV. You're entering a new phase where deadlines might need to be more self-imposed before a show gets greenlit or a pilot gets made or whatever. So what's that been like for you?
It's been an interesting experience. Like, making deadlines is definitely necessary, at least for me. And to a certain extent, the more like projects you can take out and the more quickly you can do that, the more people will have you in mind for jobs, the more likely you'll be to have something picked up. It's just kind of a numbers game in that respect. Mm-hmm. It's the same as any job, I think, in that way, where like you have to do work to get work, and deadlines are just a part of that.
And are you someone who needs deadlines, even if they're just totally arbitrary ones that you yourself set in order to get work done?
Yeah, I guess technically speaking, I don't need them, but I vastly prefer having them, even if they are arbitrary, as you say. Sometimes the deadlines that I set for myself change because I feel especially inspired about one project over another, or because our manager tells us he has a better feeling about one over the other. But in general, knowing that I'll have, for instance, like 10 pages done by X date, I'll finish writing up a one sheet by Wednesday, something like that will help keep me in line for the future.
And do you and Brian like give each other deadlines? Are you guys like project managing your writing process together, or is it sort of more chaotic than that?
Sort of, where we're like, oh, it would be great to have this done by the end of the week. Like, we usually think about stuff like in smaller timelines, I guess.
That's fascinating. I don't have a writing partner, so I'm very fascinated by how writing partnerships work. Well, we'll be back with more about deadlines, goals, and timelines after this.
What's the best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day in everyday situations. But if that's not on the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. I've used apps in the past to learn new languages, but when I came across Babbel, I wondered if it could help me refresh my knowledge of a language I once spoke well, but was now a little bit or quite a lot rusty. I have to say, I was impressed. The advanced lessons were really useful, tips and idioms that can help with in-depth conversations on topics that I can actually imagine chatting about. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel is designed by real people for real conversations, and the tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. What's more, all of Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for working listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for working listeners, at babbel.com/working. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/working, spelled BABBEL.com/working. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As a business owner or IT manager, are your cloud investment costs going up and you don't know why? It's time for Cloud Optimizer. As you migrate your business to the cloud, what you're spending and why you're spending it can get a little hazy. But Cloud Optimizer clears up the mystery and puts the cloud to work for you. Cloud Optimizer starts by analyzing usage patterns, right-sizing resources, leveraging discounts you may not be aware of, implementing automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service. As you utilize cloud-based services more and more, you don't have to lose sight or control of your spend. You can stay agile, streamline your costs, and optimize your performance, plus save significant money with Cloud Optimizer.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
Hey there, listeners. Is there a particular creative struggle you'd like to hear us tackle? Well, let us know by emailing us at workingatslate.com, or even better, call us and leave a message at 304-933-9675. That's 304-933-WORK. I still have deadlines I would like to procrastinate on, get right up next to blowing so that, you know, I could get the energy going and then meet them. So please help me out. Send us some emails. All right. Now back to our show. I'll be honest, Karen, I have incredible trouble being creative without a deadline. I even struggle these days to like write on spec. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. if there's not a deadline and a payday coming, I have a lot of trouble doing it. Whereas in graduate school, that was like all you did, right? You just wrote all the time. You try to develop a daily writing practice or whatever. So I'm envious of where Emily is coming from. So how does a writer like me or like Emily rediscover the joy of making work for its own sake without necessarily a set goal?
Yeah, writing on spec can be really painful. But also, in fairness to you, I feel like Emily is technically not writing on spec in so much as the grant that she received is paying for the time for her to write whatever she wants, rather than her trying to set aside time to write with nothing in the bank. That said, I still think this is a really tricky question. It's easiest to work without a set goal if you have an idea that you're really excited about, but that's not necessarily something that you can control. Maybe it'd be helpful to try collaborating with someone else, and then you'll be energized by the thought of hanging out with them while doing work rather than just work, and sort of help each other in that way. And that can just be like co-working, where you just work in the same space on your separate respective projects for a while, or working with that someone like on a project together, like which can be a lot of fun.
In fact, I did that recently. We had an episode, you know, a couple weeks ago where I actually wrote that episode in a cafe sitting across from a friend. She had just dropped her kid off at pottery class and was like, I have 90 minutes. Let's be each other's accountability buddy and go to a coffee shop and work. And even though we were both extroverts, we managed to pull it off. I guess the converse of what you're saying might be true too, though, right? Like sometimes you just have to trick yourself into behaving like someone has bought the piece and is going to publish it, or you already have an advance, or, you know, the painting needs to be hung in an imaginary gallery or whatever it is. Like maybe one place Emily could start is to just ask herself, what do I want to have accomplished by the end of this grant period? And then work backwards from there.
It's definitely easier if you can at least tell yourself you think the thing you're working on will be something that will get people frothing at the mouth. And yeah, I think what you've suggested is a really good idea. Like, think about what larger goal you want to accomplish, and then you have a better idea of what smaller goals you need to set within that time frame to really make it happen. Like, I think we've talked about this before in terms of, like, maybe even just, like, splitting up your to-do list or just, like, making what you want to do actually feel achievable rather than some pie-in-the-sky idea that's like, oh, like, how am I going to get all that work done?
Yeah, when your to-do list says draft a novel, right. that's really scary.
It's like, no. You know?
Yeah, exactly. You know, the writer Dennis Johnson, before he died, came to my graduate school at the University of Minnesota for a weekend. He gave a talk. He, you know, hung out with the grad students. There was a party in his honor, all sorts of stuff like that. So I got to spend a couple days around him. And Dennis Johnson is, you know, he's a legend. He was an amazing, amazing writer. And one of the graduate students asked him, you know, what gets you going? Like, where do the ideas come from? How do you sit down and write? You know, do you write every day? And he sort of, you know, looked around. He was an odd guy. And he said, I can't write unless I'm convinced the thing I'm writing will win me the Pulitzer Prize. So I tell myself that it is the greatest piece of writing of all time and will win me a Pulitzer and a National Book Award. And that's his version of the, like, getting people frothing at the mouth. He just has to convince himself of that.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. So when you're working on a project, how detailed are the plans you make? Are you, you know, putting a thing in your iCal that says January 3rd outline first season? Are you more flying by the seat of your pants? What's going on?
I will say, like, I do set goals for myself, but I don't put them in my iCal, which, like, maybe I should do. But usually, like, it's just like a spoken agreement between myself and my writing partner where we're like, we'll try to get this done this week. I tend to like to map things out week by week. Like, for example, I'll say, like, this week I'll finish making the pitch document for this project. Mm-hmm. If it's a bigger thing than that, like, for example, like a full script, I'll give myself a number of pages that I ideally like to hit by the end of the week. Sometimes I will deliberately give myself a small number that I know that I can exceed, and that way I'll feel a little more accomplished and more excited to keep going the next week.
That's great. That's great. And listeners, because I planned this episode out in advance, we have an ad break right here. Don't go away. We have more to come after this. Hey everyone, I just wanted to remind you that if you enjoy Working Overtime, please subscribe to Working so that you never miss an episode. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, we'd love you to rate or review the show. It really actually helps new listeners find us, and it helps us grow our audience. If Overcast is your app of choice, it's my app of choice, please hit the star to recommend this episode to others. Okay, let's return to this week's Working Overtime. Karen, one thing I think that can be really scary about making a plan, setting goals, imposing all that on yourself is, of course, you might not succeed in doing it. Mm-hmm. And you can forget in the midst of that, that you're the one who put those expectations on yourself. And those expectations might even be unreasonable. How do you know that your goals are reasonable and you're not just setting yourself up, you know, the future you, to be angry at the past you?
I think it's easiest to know how much you can accomplish within a given time frame by thinking about your past work. How quickly did you get work done then? And once you have a sort of idea of what you've done in the past, you can try to map things out for your new project with that in mind. Mm. And again, maybe try setting secondary goals. Like, here's what I really need to get done this week, and here's what it'd be nice to get done this week. That way, if you fall short of that second goal, then you have at least achieved that first actually necessary thing and have a sort of second thing to work towards.
That's so good. I myself am going to start doing that because...
Wow.
As you might have guessed from my question, I am someone who sets unreasonable goals for myself. For example, I wanted to have completed the book proposal for my next book in time to shop it around this past fall. You know what? That was just unreasonable for me to have expected. I was teaching. I was doing this podcast. I had big writing things that I was doing for other people, and I would have just had to kill myself to get it done on top of everything else.
Yeah.
And in October, I just finally admitted defeat, and I sheepishly emailed my agent to say, you know, I wanted to get this done this fall. It's probably not going to happen. I don't think I can start writing it until January. Can I get it to you by the end of that month? And she just wrote me to say, yeah, that's not a big deal. You know, once Thanksgiving rolls around, no one's buying books on proposal. Anyway, it's the holidays. Don't worry about it. And what I realized was that I don't know that I had even told her I was going to have it ready by the fall. This was entirely me feeling guilty and anxious about letting myself down or whatever. And she was very good about comforting me about that and being like, yeah, it's not a big deal. Aww. Just get it to me in January. And you know what? I emailed it to her yesterday.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I mean, that sounds like the best possible outcome for a situation like that, right? And to that end, I feel like it's useful to remember that you're never really working in a total vacuum. There are so many external factors that will affect when your project gets sold or when people will most want to look at it or like if your editor is even in the office. So to echo an earlier working overtime episode, remember to be kind to yourself. It's usually not going to be the end of the world if you miss a deadline. Just like make sure you're setting manageable goals for yourself. But it's okay if you don't manage it.
Yeah, totally. And you know, one thing that I think to combine two things you've said earlier is when it's a more social process, you know, like I'm getting this proposal to my agent, not the publishing house. Do you know what I mean? You're getting a draft of something to your writing partner, not Netflix. Mm-hmm. It doesn't actually have to be perfect. It has to be good enough for that person to give you feedback on how to make it better. You know, it is important to remember that a draft of something really is a draft and there can be freedom in there. It also sounds from this email like Emily may not know exactly how she wants to use this time or what she actually even wants to make over the course of this drafting period. And so I do want to, you know, encourage her, as she said in the email, to use some time to rest, to explore, to ideate, to grow. Have you had much downtime like that? Do you how do you create those circumstances so that the ideas come to you and test those ideas to see if they're big enough to be like the pilot of a TV show or whatever?
It's tough because I don't feel like I've really had that much downtime. Like we've given a lot of advice on this show on how to recharge and come up with ideas, but ultimately it isn't really up to you. Like it's kind of a game of chance. Like you can go take a walk, you can watch a movie you've never seen before, you can go to a museum, and sometimes you'll feel inspired by that experience, but sometimes you just have to sit down and bang out something that you don't necessarily love. That said, I think you'll usually know from the jump once you start like writing down your actual idea, how sustainable it is or what form will best befit it. If in the process of fleshing it out, you realize that it's a bigger or smaller thing than you'd initially envisioned, it's not that big of a deal to change its shape because it's still hopefully like just a you idea and not something that you've already pitched or has been accepted somewhere. But even then, like just talk to your editor about it and probably you can work something out.
Yeah, editors are human beings. I mean, one other thing that strikes me here when you mention, you know, sometimes you just got to sit down and bang it out, even if you're not feeling inspired. You know, that's part of life as a creative person, is that, of course, a lot of what you're doing in that initial work is just laying the groundwork for revision. So much of the work, including of the creative work, is actually in taking a draft of something, whether it's a painting, a rough cut of a film, a first draft of an essay or a novel or whatever, and, you know, responding to that thing you created in order to make it an even better and truer version of itself. Mm-hmm. That is often where the rubber hits the road with creativity, actually. Mm-hmm. And so in some cases, you can just sort of actually not sweat that first draft that much or not worry about the quality of the idea and just get something out so that you can then respond to it.
Yeah, like it's tough both ways. Like I think I've talked about on the show before where like I'm not somebody who likes to show anybody anything if I don't think it's really good already. And so in that respect, like sometimes a first draft can be a little intimidating. But at the same time, like I think this is the important part of kind of maybe a bigger point to make about the question that we're addressing right now, where it's like if you have the time to be able to sort of map out what you're doing, make sure that you give yourself a window to look over the work that you've already done and do revisions before you show it to somebody else, if you are like me and are concerned about that kind of thing.
Yeah, totally. Well, Emily, this sounds like a really exciting opportunity for you. Mm-hmm. Please keep in touch with us and let us know how it's going. We really are rooting for you in your grant period year where you get to just kind of explore your creativity. That's all the time we have for this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening. And if you like this show, do not forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you have questions you'd like us to address, guests you'd like to have on, things you'd like to rant about, your own creativity you want to discuss, we would love to hear from you. Send us an email at working@slate.com or give us a ring at 304-933-WORK.
And if you'd like to support what we do, sign up for Slate Plus at slate.com/workingplus. You get bonus content, including exclusive episodes of Slow Burn and Big Mood, Little Mood, and you'll be supporting what we do right here on Working.
Big thanks to Kevin Bendis, who produces Working Overtime and did such a wonderful job reading Emily's letter, and to our series producer, Cameron Drews. We'll be back on Sunday with a brand new episode of Working, and in 2 weeks, we'll have another Working Overtime. Until then, get back to work.